Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Guardians of the Cyberspace. I'm very happy to have a wonderful guest with us today. Ladies and gentlemen, Iga Luna. Iga used to be the Director General of the Israeli National Cyber Directorate. He had a very interesting life before that. He has a very interesting life after that. And Igal, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I would like to start by asking you, tell me your life story. How did you go from being a kid to becoming the head of the Israeli National Directorate?
Well, it wasn't obvious, I can tell you that. Growing as a kid in the early 80s in Jerusalem, internet was a dream. Maybe even not even a dream back then. And the first computer I got in the bar mitzvah, it was a ZX Spectrum. Wow. I think it's now with the capacity of one of the buttons of my Garmin watch or something like that, maybe even less. And we used cassettes, tape cassettes, in order to
play games,
upload, download, whatever from nothing. So dreaming about what I'm doing now was not even a possibility, but I wanted to be a spy. So I went to learn Arabic, because if you learn Arabic, there are more chances you get to the intelligence corps. And that's what happened. I learned Arabic, and it was pretty good at that.
In school, you learned Arabic?
In school, okay. Yes. Although in Jerusalem, you're in friction with a lot of Arabic linguistics, and it was helpful, but mainly in school. But once I was recruited to A200, when I'm speaking about A200 in the 80s, it's nothing like A200 today, except the vibes, the culture, the innovation of culture. And back then, started as a linguistic and grew up with the firm, as you can say. And then the mobile entered back in the 90s. And then the internet entered in the late 90s, and it was interesting enough.
So how many years have you been to 8200?
It was six and a half years, but then immediately I joined the Shin Bet, the Israeli security agency, domestic. Also, as a linguistic, Arabist, I wanted to be a human handler, to deal with people.
Can you explain to people who don't know what human stands for, what it is?
It's to recruit human agents and tell them to extract intelligence or to do this and to do that. Very exciting. That's espionage, right?
Human intelligence. Human.
Human intelligence. SIGINT is signal intelligence.
OSINT, open source intelligence.
Yeah, that's a new thing. Back then was only SIGINT, VSINT, visual intelligence, and human. And I wanted to be human handler. And they asked me, you're a captain rank from the A200, you know little SIGINT. So please stay a little longer as a student here. We're studying in the Tel Aviv University. I worked parallel in the Shin Bet and said, okay, help us to build, the mobile just entered 1995, things like that. So I stayed with the SIGINT. And waited for my turn to go to a human, the real thing, not just this cheap.
Not the boring computer stuff, but people dealing with
geeks,
people.
Geeks. I'm not a geek. I'm a tough human handler. And since then, I'm waiting for my turn in human.
Yeah. Amazing. And at some point, you were offered to take the position from the Shin Bet. You were offered to take the position. When was it?
In fact, that's a nice story of throwing the ball and running to get the ball at the other hand. Mm-hmm. In the early 2010s, there was a big debate after Professor Ben Israel, big initiative, cyber initiative, a big debate how should Israel, the state of Israel, should prepare and operate cyber defense. Until then, the Shin Bet was responsible. Clandestine agency, covert, working behind the scenes, not really, matching the needs, the growing needs of the new world, the open private sector and businesses and so on. So the initiative suggested that there be a new agency, first National Cyber Bureau, then authority, would turn to be the directorate. But it was also concerning taking responsibilities and authorities from the Shin Bet, God forbid, from one government agency, very prestigious one, to another.
So I
was a general. I was general in the Shin Bet, responsible for SIGINT and cyber, also for cyber defense, critical infrastructures, by the way. And the thing is, I needed to turn it away peacefully to another new agency. Who knows about them? They're new, they're fresh. Major concerns, and I was leading of that, and I pushed it forward. And when I finished pushing it, the Prime Minister called me and say, okay, now I ask you to come over and lead it. And that happened in early 2018. So I kind of threw the ball and ran fast to get it on the other side and continue until dunking into the basket of cyber defense.
Amazing. How many years have you been there?
4 years, exactly 4 years. By the way, the term is 3+3. So after the first 3 years, I was asked to extend in another 3 years. And I asked politely from, by the way, two different prime ministers. The first was Netanyahu and then Mr. Bennett, not to continue the full 3 years. I don't believe these terms, these positions, anyone should be in the same spot for more than 4 years. These positions, I mean technology, hectic, uprising technologies all the time with people and technologies coming together. 6 years is too long. You get little obsolete. You kind of not relevant in your chair. So I from the beginning, I stated that only 4 years. And when the exact day of the fourth year arrived in January 2022, I said goodbye and relayed the baton to my lucky successor.
Amazing. So you've been the head of the Israeli National Cyber Directorate in one of the most interesting times of the cyberspace and Israel's journey in the cyberspace. What do you feel were your biggest challenges and biggest achievements during that time?
Well, the biggest challenge, no doubt, started in April 2020. April 2020, I was 2 years and 2 months in position. And after the main challenge of the basic thing of converging and building a converged operational national directorate, which is a story by itself.
Yeah, because you still were part of the building of the entity, because it wasn't like a very well-established directorate.
Exactly. I was appointed very rarely in the government bureaucracy. I was appointed and then asked in 6 month term to do the job. Usually it's upside down. It's first
they give you the responsibility
of convergence and then appointing someone to lead. There was no time. It's cyber and the attempted attacks happened all the time. And second, it was so nasty between two different competing agencies, freshly new. One was since 2012, the other since 2016. And it was so poisonous, so toxic that we needed to cut immediately and converge it overnight. And that's my point, was to replace two different director generals, one of the bureau, one of the authority. And only then to begin the hard work of the challenge of converging it, taking many fingers and creating one strong fist. That was the idea. And I think we succeeded in that. But before we even finished the job, April 2020, 2 months after Qasem Soleimani's departure, the Iranians made a decision to point all the cyber cannons towards Israel. So it's a large volume. Lucky for us, not such a good quality. The quality of their attacks is relatively low, but there's a learning curve. They're improving all the time. But the volume is challenging by itself. And since then, we witness a growing volume. So this is the major challenge. And when Naftali Bennett got into the chair of the prime minister, we knew each other from past positions. He was Minister of Defense, of Education, other things. But on our first weekly meeting, he asked me, Igal, how long you're in office? And it was like 3.5 years. But I told him, it's 2 years and 2 months plus 8 years. That's how it felt from April 2020 until July 2021. Really hectic. And remember, we had the COVID-19 back then. So that's another challenge. Suddenly, all around the globe, people were sent home to work, remote access, what we call huge attack surface in our language. And second, less spoken of, is that hundreds of millions of youngsters, high school, primary school students, and others, sent home simultaneously and were told, okay, now work only with the computer. So what can go wrong, right?
Of course.
No. So just take in consideration that 2%, 3% out of them find the dark side of the, what we call cyber, is the dark side of ICT, and decide to stay there to make money. 2-3% of hundreds of millions, that's with the attack surface, something, a nightmare that the world is still witnessing, still suffer from, until these days. So this is lightly, you asked for challenges. I can speak for how many days we have.
Absolutely. I would agree that COVID-19 was a dream coming true for our hackers, because many organizations have opened their doors for remote access, VPN, and they had to do it very, very quickly, sometimes without going through the security processes that they would usually go if they had more time. And obviously, many of the problems that we've seen after that are the results of the COVID-19.
You know that the cyber companies, I won't name names, but very famous and very huge, most of them Israeli, so you can guess. It was the first time ever they authorized to get out a code, source code, from their offices outside. Mm. And that was, you know, a trauma, a drama, something that would not be possible otherwise. And now it's a fact.
Yep. One of the most common questions that I get when I travel around the world, and I traveled a lot, but compared to you, I'm like, it's unbelievable. Your schedule with traveling is unbelievable. How many countries did you visit from the beginning of 2024?
I can tell you, from a retirement, it's a little more than 2 years. My accountant made the math for me. Almost 30% of the time. Overall, including weekends, I was abroad.
That's crazy.
Yes, it's a little crazy, but Israel is very good to build, to innovate, to grow your kids. But selling is outside, and the world is in a bigger and growing need for the cyber Israeli product. So why not?
Amazing. So one of the most common questions that I get when I travel is, how come Israel is very good in cyberspace? And we know that there are many answers to that, the army. But one of the answers is that we have to be very good in cyberspace, because
you don't have a second chance.
Yeah, we don't have a second chance.
We just had a very painful reminder of that on October 7th. Mm. What happens if you just blink your eyes too long? And in cyber, it can be much more devastating, as you can see.
So what do you feel are Israel's biggest challenge in the cyberspace?
Israel is an island that has advantages and disadvantages. We are connected with few connections to the world.
But explain what do you mean by an island? Because we're not physically an island.
A telecom island, yeah. A telecom island means that we're unlike most countries in Europe and even in Asia. We are fully dependent on very few, and a couple of inches links to the world. Satellites are not relevant in internet with the latency and everything. So it's fully dependent on our economy, on everything, on this connectivity. So if you have a good cyber solutions that can guard those few gates, that's great, but you have only a few gates. So the challenges start from the even connectivity, for example, DDoS attacks. Then critical infrastructures. We have only one major electricity provider. I don't talk about generators that we have coupled, but transformation and everything. We're a one-stop shop country, a single point of failure in many, many terms. And in cyber, as we get more and more digital, that creates a huge challenge. And second, that even more critical, I call it the biggest or the most critical infrastructure of today, is democracy. And Israel is fragile like all other democracies, but Israel is a little more fragile because we are more threatened, more challenged. And the democracy, as we saw in the past year and a half, is even more fragile. And the bad guys realize that. Bad guys can be from individuals, groups, terror groups, rogue countries, North Korea, Iran. I can speak about a couple of superpowers here, at least two. All in common, they are not democratic. They are not dependent on public opinion. They are less digital. Hamas is no digital and no public opinion. So you cannot, you know, counterattack them with cyber. But they realize the new asymmetry. I call it the new David and Goliath, but it's a malicious David. And we are the Goliath, unfortunately. Heavy, lazy, moving slowly, not creative enough, and they have a cyber slingshot. So democracy, I hold the Guinness Book of Records of protecting four campaigns, election campaigns, in 2 years. The fifth one, I was already at home making barbecue. But the common denominator of these four, each time we saw more and more growing attacks, growing in sophistication, complexity, and creativity. We also have our hand, but the thing is that it's much easy to define in electricity, for example, what is the critical thing. It's a turbine. It's located here in this coordinates. You can parameterize it and work. What is the democracy? Where's the exactly the democracy thing to defend? And it's much more elusive, and there's the social media, and you have the actual election networks and many, many attacks, impossible attacks surface to defend.
What do you feel was their goal when they tried to attack our democratic process? Did they just try to take down the systems? Did they try to manipulate the way people elect? Or what was their goals?
What I'm in liberty to say is that the common denominator of this all this kind of attacks of David and Goliath thing is to undermine people's trust. And it's getting too easy to undermine people's trust today. When youngsters and many, many depend, get, consume their news from Twitter or X or whatever they call it, and from the social media, and fake is everywhere. So it's too easy to undermine people's trust. If you can recall some of the elections, the last one was okay, but some of the elections we had issues with people's trust, regardless cyber, but things around it. And it's too easy to inflame this trust. And to inflame misinformation, disinformation. And in democratic system, this is the toxic that can kill everyone. And we, in our cyber realm, we needed to make sure, and you need to do that according to democratic rules. So you cannot monitor everything. You cannot do whatever you want, although it would be much more efficient. But no, you need the checks and balances. You need to make sure that you're not crossing any line. By the way, people don't know, but as the first election began, we were called, I was trying to update the prime minister about how we prepare. And he stopped me. And he asked me, please, I'm one of the candidates. So it will be inappropriate to me to be involved in how you defend. So I said, you're the prime minister, you're my boss, you're responsible. I said, yeah. And he organized a consortium of the Attorney General and the National Security Council and the military secretary of the Prime Minister. All of us are public servants. That we are the caucus, the committee that
was in charge
dealt with all the security, cybersecurity issues of the campaign. and putting away the politicians.
Yeah, that's very nice.
This is a kind of checks and balance that, people should know that in Israel, at least back then, were in practice. And that's how you should be and how you should conduct in order to maintain the main issue of people trust.
I liked your analogy for the malicious David and the Goliath who tries to protect against those cyber slings. And it's very important to remember that it's not just Israel which is the Goliath. Every big country which is technology dependent today is in the position where small non-technological entities have the power, have the edge because of the asymmetry of attack. Obviously, there are many reasons. The attacker have to succeed one time. The people who protect have to succeed 100% of the time, and many other reasons. Also, I like the things that you said, which we have a new generation of terrorists and attacker. And we saw that with ISIS. ISIS was not a very important terrorist group, but they became very, very famous because unlike most terrorists, they are technology natives. They had the ability to use technology in a very wise way. They used those very viral videos. They made, for a lot of people, they made terrorism cool. So many people who believed in this cause wanted to be part of this ecosystem and everything that goes there. And this was their success. And this is something that we see more and more, even here. So those new terrorists, those new attackers, they don't care about television. They don't care about radio. All of those traditional media outlets. They only work on the social networks. They work on the internet, and they are very, very good at that. And they are able to win public opinion, even though their message is malicious, even though they are obviously bad people who do crazy things that we will not discuss in this podcast, but the information is out there. So I absolutely agree that this is one of the biggest challenges that we face.
I can remind you 11 years ago, it's like the Mesozoic one, the dinosaur age. April 7th, I think, in 2013, suddenly the Associated Press Twitter account publishing two explosions in the White House, President Obama is injured.
Yeah, I remember that.
What immediately followed by a drop of two-digit number in billions of dollars in the stock exchange.
Yeah, in the Dow Jones, yeah, absolutely.
Now, whoever done that hacked into the AP Twitter account, probably using a password of 1, 2, 3, maybe even 4. And he wasn't smart enough to do what I can tell. It's the 101 on the hacker's book. Once you hack in, you change the password, right?
Yeah.
They were too lazy or too stupid not to do that. But so AP realized that and changed password and all the TV channels that broadcast from the White House show that nothing happened and everything returned to normal. But whoever was behind it was the Syrian Electronic Army. Back then, conflict between Assad's regime to the U.S. regarding proliferation of chemical weapons or something like that. And the Syrian Electronic Army, it's not the NSA, it's not A200, it's nothing. It's four mediocre hackers. They're all known who are they. Most of them are not with us anymore. And they managed to cause, you know, the GDP of Syria is 1/5 of the GDP of Wisconsin or something like that. It's not even comparable economies. And they made it in 2013 through hacking, through cyber. They could also almost put on their knees the biggest economy in the world. And that's should bother us all, because the main thing that amazes me, it didn't repeat. Since then, it's too easy. By the way, the stock exchange itself, it's fortified with Israeli technology, and it's very hard, if not impossible, to hack into the stock exchange. But you don't need to do that. And that the creativity of these malicious Davids, and they are fast enough. They are not wearing all the armors of the Goliaths. That brought Israel to be a giant in technology in cyber, but it also helps. And the others realize that they are not stupid and they're following the same path. Israel and the West, we should develop the new kind of countermeasure or creativity or innovative thinking in order to get the upper hand again. Otherwise, it's going to be very, very challenging.
We've talked of October 7th, and Israel is currently in war. Everybody sees the pictures and the photos. It's a very sad story. It's a very complicated story. At the same time, Israel is conducting another war or facing another war, which is a cyberspace war. Most of the people don't see that because there are no pictures, there's no crying babies there, there's no casualties that we can see. But you have seen this war. You know this war. Can you tell us what's going on in cyberspace right now during this physical war that we're having?
Yes, as far as I know. First of all, and very important to say, there was no cyber attack at the 7th, October 7th. It wasn't a lot of rumors and false and fake news about nothing of that happened. Not even a serious attempt. Why is that? Because Israel was already engaged in a war, as I told you, since April 2020. So everybody were already in trenches. Nobody could surprise us at this. But since then, we see a growth of more than three times, or almost three times, than the usual attacks. And they're getting nasty. And we see more and more state-sponsored attacks. What we witnessed until then was the normal ransomware and economic motivated attacks. Now we see ugly attacks just to cause damage, just to cause sadness and things like that from all around the world that don't like Jews or support Hamas terrorists.
People don't like Jews?
Imagine that. Oh, how could they?
It's the first time I'm hearing about it.
But and plus, add to that also the economic motivations. They also smell money, smell opportunities, and they do whatever ugly thing they do. So still, and we should knock on wood, we don't see any major attacks. We see leakages of data, which is sad, but it's not critical. We see the critical infrastructures are well defended. And as you said, you need only one puncture that all the air will go from this zodiac and it will sink. Mm-hmm. So we don't see that. We see that the system that we built, by the way, since 2002, Israel was the first to begin with a national approach towards critical infrastructure way before the term cyber was in use. It was the NISA, the National Information Security Agency, which was a nickname for a department inside the Shin Bet I was in charge of. So, yes, we have 22 years of good experience, and again, touching all the woods that you can find here, in defending critical infrastructure and defining what is really critical. But the attempts are growing harder and harder, and it's also undermining people's trust. Even if something wrong goes with the LGBT a website, romantic website that is compromised and the data leaks, that's also something that impact on overall a feeling of security by the Israeli people. So it's not just about the real damage, but the perceived impact. But I think and I feel, and I'm a little biased, of course, although I'm 2 years plus out of office, that people gain more trust or believe more the capabilities and the competence of the overall Israel cyber defenders, which is led by the national director, but it's not only them. Partnership is something that really needed to be emphasized. And that's, you asked about the secret of Israel. I think this is the how to crack it. And that's something that you see other countries try in variable levels of success. I just returned from Singapore, and they are a very good example of that. But they don't have the Israeli tendency of community, of partnership, that is very embedded in us. Although we are all the time whining about we're too divided and so on, we're as seen, as proven in October 7th, we are much, much more cohesive and much more together than even we thought. But in cyber, it's critical. Cyber is a story of team play, of partnerships. And in Israel, it comes much more naturally than in other countries. So when we took six agencies, national security agencies, the Directorate, the Shin Bet, the Mossad, two different units in the military, one gathering intelligence and the other to defend, which is contradictions in terms in many ways. And the Ministry of Defense security unit, and put them all together in what we call the orchestra. It won the highest national security award of Israel back in 2021. Not because of the great technology. Yes, it's very good technology, but compared to Iron Dome and things like that, let's be more modest. It was awarded because of partnership, of the miracle of working together many, many years with dealing with all the conflicts and debates internally without escalating it, without... And that's the beauty, and this is one of the things that probably can happen mostly or only in Israel, because we are surrounded, because of the thing that we understand, if we were not working together, we'll be hung side by side. And that's something that's worth mentioning and still going on. Hopefully it will spread to other fields, not just cyber.
Let's talk about the future. We were moving away from the war. What do you feel are the biggest problems that the world is about to face in the field of cybersecurity? We have this bug here who's bugging me. The bug is bugging me.
Check if it's not it's not computerized. Nanotechnology.
What do you feel, Hoyle, are the biggest problems that the world is going to face in the world of cybersecurity?
Well, let's begin with workforce. Wherever I go, and I do national projects all around the globe, from Latin America to through Africa, the Balkans, Asia, the biggest thing is lack of experts, and even for a low level cyber experts or you know, a tier one or SOC analyst. And the shortage is huge. We're talking about millions, and it's still, and the gap is growing, and you don't have enough trainers, and you don't have enough motivation to train, because the big money is in the products, not in the training. And this is something that we need, all of us, all the cyber community, the Israeli one, the global one, to work much harder, because it's great job opportunities. It gets people, you know, youngsters that already, as you said, are born into the computer literacy world. You just need to get those who are more, you know, hunting head, and get them to be expert in cyber. So this is the first thing. The second thing, as I mentioned, is how to defend democracies. As it gets, the deep fake and the misinformation, disinformation, all of this is something that cyber is thriving there, and it's bad. And third one, yes, it's worth mentioning, the AI. Mm. AI comes with a lot of opportunities, a great promise to the mankind, and also great dangers. And we are used to think backwards of what found us in the 20th century and in the beginning of the 21st century. This is something that will threaten us in the coming years, decade, maybe less. And whoever thinks that, okay, we are people, we are the strongest species on earth, we conquered the universe, yes, and we built our own end. Yeah. If we are not
killed. This is, we are the biggest species on earth. This is such a 2024 way of thinking, you know. It would exactly. Feel so old and obsolete.
Yeah, and we are so big, so we created something, a monster that will overrule us.
Maybe there is a possibility
if we're not handling and managing this risk properly. Yeah. And it's manageable.
Putin said a country that would rule AI would rule the world, right?
And look, today, the biggest conflict in the world, it's not who rules the seas like it was a couple of centuries ago, is who rules the data. And that's why US and China, and not US and Russia, are at the tip of this conflict. Mm. Because there's a huge conflict there. And you see, those have Google, Amazon, Apple. Those have Tencent and their Baidu and whatever the names of their don't recall. We're not using it here, partly because of my tenure. I insisted of making sure nothing of this kind enters, let's say, critical or public service. And now I see the US is pushing back TikTok, let's say 10 years too late.
Yeah. No, well, they tried in the past to ban TikTok, but now they're doing that. I'm not sure if that's, you know, I'm not sure if that would absolutely help. It's just a small step in the
another meantime. Remedy, yeah. Another remedy, but it's the right direction or the right way of thinking. Yeah. That yes, this is data. It's not nice to have. Hey, let's Google. No, no, no. It's something that can be critical to the basic way of living of the everything.
In 2014, I gave a talk, a TEDx talk. Thanks to Karen Lazari, who connected me to them. I gave a TEDx talk. She was a guest in this podcast about state-sponsored spies inside Facebook. I also gave this talk in RSA, San Francisco. And I talked about the fact that every country has the incentive to put a spy today inside commercial companies because those commercial companies have such strong intelligence-related data databases, right? So every country in the world could use the data that sits inside Facebook, Twitter, and others in order to promote its own national security agenda. Few years after I gave this talk, it was discovered that Saudi Arabia actually hired spies inside Twitter. That was very, very interesting. But one of the things that I said there at the end of the talk is that would we be one day in a place where we would teach our children only to download apps from certain countries because other countries are considered enemies? And amazingly enough, that's exactly what happened today.
Well, I think that define countries, I think in a couple of years, decade or so, we'll see different entities. What we call today countries or nation countries will change to corporates. Mm. We already begin to see that. And AI, as I mentioned, is the catalyst for all of this because it really removes borders or seam lines, traditional seam lines, and get us to a different ballgame. And it goes much, much faster than we think. And again, Israel has a good opportunity to take a leading part in that. Still, we are not running fast enough because we are engaged in other stuff. But in AI, we have great minds, even here in the Tel Aviv University, but in Israel mostly. And we need to harness it, first of all, for the benefit of mankind and Israel specifically. But second, to push back the risks and the threat actors that are already working to abuse it like they do with all other technologies. And again, ICT, this is the main thing, not energy, not any other thing. Just watch at the big players what they're fighting at, and you realize that.
Last question before we move to the next part of the podcast. We've talked about your journey, your past, up until being the head of the Israeli National Cybersecurity Directorate. We talked about your time in the directorate. What are you doing today?
Well, today, a freelance, I have my own company that do mainly three things. First is helping, assisting startups, Israeli startups. I like the early stage. Those, some of them without an offices yet. One of them already listed in Nasdaq. I was in the ceremony, very...
Amazing.
Yeah. It's fun. But the common denominator, they're all in the cybersecurity, defensive cybersecurity. They have survived the first 18 months. I started with 18, now only 16, but it's still beats the statistics. And in some, I'm a chairman, board member, advisory board, but I'm involved in pushing them. I believe in all of them. And I strongly believe that we'll see some unicorns coming out of them. Second is investments. I'm a venture partner in a small VC and consult to foreign and many kinds of VCs, all of them scouting for the Israeli companies. And I can tell you, even in this economic and geopolitical situation, yes, there's a big interest in whatever the Israeli
ecosystem
and things happen here all the time. Yes, it's still very attractive to investors from all around the globe, maybe even more than before.
Oh, interesting.
And the third thing that consumes most of my time and travels is to help other countries to get something similar, at least, for to what Israel has done in cybersecurity, working with governments mainly. In India, it's with the big conglomerates, but helping them to build strong cyber national cyber defense with an agency, with the technologies, with everything. And that's in Africa, in Latin America, as I said, in the Balkans and other places, still in different phases, but it's moving on. And I emphasize on Israeli technology. So I bring some of my companies, some other companies as well, as long as they're good and the Israeli industry is great. And as long as they're Israeli, because yes, we are doing pretty good in cyber defense. So why bother taking risks with others?
Amazing. Igor, we're going to go now to the rapid question sections of this podcast. I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions and you should answer as quickly as possible. If there is something you want to elaborate on one of them, feel free to do so. But let's do that. Are you ready? Are you sure?
No.
Okay. I think I know the answer to the first question because we had a chat before this podcast, but we're going to start. What do you prefer, PC or Mac?
PC, no doubt.
iPhone or Android?
Android, come on.
Chrome, Edge, Firefox, or Internet Explorer?
I'm with the Chrome.
Star Wars or Star Trek?
Star Trek, more intellectual.
Which of those series, like the Voyager, the whatever, Captain Kirk?
Bring them on. I grew up in the first, it was in black and white still in the old Israeli television. So I even was the customs in Purim, in the Israeli Halloween, as Captain Kirk. With
oh,
all
wow.
I kept it until recently.
My favorite is Jean-Luc Picard, even though I love Captain Kirk as well.
I like his hairstyle, yes.
You can relate. A swimming pool or a beach?
Swimming pool.
Mm. The Simpsons, Family Guy, Rick and Morty, or something else?
Oh, all of the above. Come on, that's too tough to decide.
Microsoft Word or Google Docs?
Both works, as long as it save it properly.
Okay. Excel or Google Spreadsheet?
Excel.
Of course.
Old-fashioned.
jokes or riddles?
Jokes.
DC or Marvel?
I'm too old for that.
None of them. Okay. Favorite book?
Wow. Next question. Too many. I have open books near my bed and in my travel bag. That
I know that feeling exactly. Favorite place in the world? Except Israel, obviously.
Well, I would definitely say that Italy.
Italy.
And it's either Rome or Florence. That's the big...
Interesting. Rome, that's a very interesting decision. Yeah. Rome is nice for the first 48 hours, but I feel this is it.
No, you should come with me to the hidden places.
I would come with you. If you're serious, I would travel with you.
All the ice cream there. You need to go shop by shop.
Okay. Favorite movie?
Too many. But Godfather will be probably one of the in the top list.
Yeah, of course. Tea or coffee?
Coffee.
Of course. Google Home or Alexa or none of the above?
None of them.
None of the above.
They're too spying at me.
Cats or dogs?
Neither. I'm not a pet guy.
Okay. Breakfast, lunch, or dinner?
Breakfast.
Beer, wine, or whiskey?
Again, why or the whole thing? You should.
That's a good answer. Okay. One message to CISOs out there.
Well, you should speak louder. Stand on your beliefs. Don't be afraid from the top brass and the C-level and their budget things. You'll lead the way. As I see more and more companies and corporates, they realize that the day that CISOs will sit on the front seats of the C-level, on the boards, is coming very fast. So, yeah, stand on your believes, speak loud, and it will get there.
Amazing. One message to entrepreneurs.
Failing is not a really a bad thing, as long as you do it properly and you learn and you don't repeat the same mistakes. Yes, it fertilizes the ground that good fruits and things grow in. So don't be afraid of failing. Yes, it's part of it.
Amazing. If people want to follow you or contact you or, I don't know, keep in touch, where should they do that? Do you have a website or Twitter account?
LinkedIn, I think, will be the best today. Yes, I'm working on the website.
Okay.
But as I said, old-fashioned. But LinkedIn is the new thing.
Perfect. Anything else that you would like to say before we wrap it up?
Just to thank you for this great opportunity.
Iga, thank you so much for coming. Thank you for your time. You are a super interesting person. I know that we've been on many stages together, and I hope that's going to be the situation in the future as well.
To be continued.
To be continued. And I hope to see you again in this podcast. Guys, thank you so much for listening. I want to thank the Tel Aviv University podcast team for all their work. And we would see you in the next episode of Guardians of the Cyber Space. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.